This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. I'm Sean Tubbs. Charlottesville Police Chief Tim Longo held a press conference on Monday, November 12th at the Charlottesville Police Station to discuss what officials know in the murder of 26-year-old Jane Warren McGowan. McGowan's body was found on November 9th at her home in the 800 block of St. Clair Avenue. Here's Chief Longo.
I want to apologize to all of you for my absence over the weekend. I was out of town. I know there was some frustration in getting information. But we did promise you we'd bring you together today and talk a little bit about this case to the extent that we can. I've given you a copy of just some facts that you may already have and be aware of, but so that you'll have some point of reference or additional information as you put your story together. We're in the aftermath of a very tragic event here in our community. As all of you know, late Friday afternoon, about 2:46, two individuals went to 807 St. Clair Avenue to check on a co-worker. They were concerned. She did not show up for work that morning. They phoned police. We arrived shortly thereafter. Officers were able to gain entry into the home. They discovered 26-year-old Jane Warren McGowan. She was dead on her couch with an apparent gunshot wound to the head. During the course, very early course of that investigation, it was determined that Ms. McGowan's vehicle had been taken from the scene, presumably by the persons responsible for her death. We broadcasted a teletype to surrounding jurisdictions and put together a media release, which all of you were very helpful in disseminating, which provided both a vehicle description and a tag number of her car. Fortunately, early yesterday afternoon, a citizen called Crime Stoppers and reported seeing that vehicle secreted in a wooded area off the 200 block of Fairway Avenue in Charlottesville. I went there earlier today with Captain Bibb and Lieutenant Kirby to look at the scene myself to get a sense for just how secreted this vehicle may have been. Very difficult to have seen it from the street, and most people who live in that area would say that it was difficult to view as well because it tended to blend in with some of the foliage and shrubbery there. Fortunately, this person was on foot, presumably, when they discovered the car. We were able to get there with investigators and forensic support personnel, process the scene around where the vehicle was discovered to see if, in fact, there was any physical or forensic evidence there that might link us to a suspect or at least to the persons that might have deposited the car there. The vehicle was then taken from the scene. It's currently in our custody, and as we speak, it's being processed by forensic personnel who've been working throughout the day in a very tedious process to make sure that we do everything we can to try to identify any evidence that may be secreted in that vehicle. I have had an opportunity to speak with the victim's family members to express not only the sympathy of the department but this entire community and to assure them that the resources of this department will focus very heavily on identifying the person responsible for this, hopefully in the days to come. That's where we are with respect to our investigation. I do want to make a sincere and public plea for anyone who may have heard or seen anything either late Thursday night in the area of the 800 block of St. Clair Avenue or Locust or Hazel, any sounds that they may have heard that would have been similar to gunfire or any loud noises that caught their attention that could help us maybe isolate the time of day when this may have occurred. And we're presuming it probably happened sometime late Thursday evening into early Friday morning. Anyone who may have seen anything suspicious, heard a car leaving the area, saw a car that they didn't recognize, or perhaps even recognized before but knew that it wasn't someone who lived in the area. Anyone who may have seen anyone along this trail any time late Thursday night or Friday morning, perhaps someone in the area might have heard a car on the trail late Friday or early late Thursday or early Friday, that they may give us some information and provide us with some detail that could help us maybe identify at least the people who were responsible for depositing that car there either Friday or late Thursday evening. So with that, I'll take any questions that you might have. Well, I think it's broader than a foot trail. It's a pretty wide clearing in the trees. It's accessed by our Parks Department. I believe that area back there is city-owned, so they would access it to be able to cut the grass and to take care of any public utilities that might be back there.
It's right on a trail.
No, it's not the trail. It's a trail that's located off Fairway Avenue. Well, it could be person or persons. There's forensic and physical evidence that we're looking at that might help give us some better clarity as to whether it was one or more persons involved. But at this point, we're acting on the assumption that it could have been more than one person. We don't know that for a fact, but that's certainly something we're looking at. No. No, to my knowledge, there was no other type of assault. Just yes, she was. You know, typically we wouldn't talk about motive at any point of an investigation, but clearly at this point. But frankly, there's no obvious reason why this would have happened to this young lady. She's made remarkable contributions to our community in the time that she's been here. I think all of you know she's a graduate of the University of Virginia, left here for a short time, went to D.C. I believe she was involved in fundraising efforts there as well. Came back to Charlottesville because she liked the community, was very instrumental in doing fundraising here with AIDS and AIDS awareness, and was planning a major event here in our community. So I think that I'd be hard-pressed to come up with some reason why someone would want to harm a young lady like this who's done so much in her life and certainly so much for our community. No, I don't think it's, I think it would be irresponsible for us at this point to talk a whole lot about that aspect of the investigation. Keep in mind that while there's certainly an understandable need for transparency, both as we relate information to the family, but also as we relate it to you, there's a greater need to retain some type of operational and tactical advantage over this investigation until we narrow it in on a suspect or suspects. So we want to be somewhat guarded with that level of detail. So I'm really not in a position to either confirm that or dispel it. We're in the process of conducting a forensic examination here in town. At some point in time, it may or may not go to the state lab. That will be determined by Sergeant Dillon and his staff after conferring with Lieutenant Kirby, Sergeant Brake, and the investigators. Well, suffice it to say that we're looking for forensic evidence. We're also looking for physical evidence. We're looking for things that may not be as obvious as what you would discern as physical evidence. Forensic evidence could be very minute, may not be apparent to the naked eye. So needless to say, we're doing a pretty exhaustive search of that vehicle. And even though it's a small car, it's a Nissan Sentra, the cockpit or the passenger compartment of that car is relatively small. We've spent the better part at this point of probably 4 to 5 hours with a forensic supervisor and a forensic investigator, literally combing every aspect of that vehicle in hopes to try to find some identifying characteristic that could lead us to a potential suspect. And we may not find that, but that's the process that we're undertaking presently. I'm not aware that there were any signs of forced entry. Don't want to draw any inferences from that at this point, other than what reasonable people could draw. But it's my understanding that the police were able to enter through an unlocked door. There were no weapons recovered in the house. At this point, again, the forensic persons are still in the vehicle. I am not aware of any weapons that have been recovered. I don't want to get into that level of detail from the crime scene. Sharon, it's really hard to characterize that at this point. And again, we really don't have any indication as to what might have motivated this. Well, I think any time a homicide takes place in a community, particularly something as egregious as this, that we need to be concerned, we need to be alarmed for our own safety. But I don't think that, I think people are taking reasonable precautions to safeguard their homes and locking their doors and windows and being aware of their surroundings. But I think it's also important to note that this is not something that typically occurs in our community. It's certainly not something that has happened here for many, many years, to my knowledge. I mean, this is a victim. I mean, if you look at violent crime across the country, there's a lot of correlation between victimization and suspects. Typically, victims of crimes like this are people who engage in high-risk behavior. This is not the case with this young lady. This is a remarkable woman who has lived a life of contribution. And it would be hard to imagine why someone would want to take her life this way, which is part of the puzzle for us. But we're working diligently to try to get to the bottom of this crime, at the same time working in a manner that at some point we can come back to the community and let them know that we have someone in custody so that they don't need to be concerned. But to try to figure out whether it's or characterize it as a random act or not, I don't think we're in a position to be able to answer that one way or another at this point. That's okay, we can come back to you.
The car location,
I'm sorry, Henry.
The car location is so close to her house and within a mile of the house, and when you put somewhere where not a lot of people would know when you could take the car, is that interesting for you to go for? What does that mean to you about it?
It's a clue, but again, it's not a clue or factor that I would talk a lot about, because again, there's reasonable inferences that you can draw as you've done, but at some point I think we need to be cautious about what we say publicly, because again, you know, part of retrospectively investigating crime is you need to have some type of tactical advantage over a suspect if you can, and how we do that is to be very cautious about information that we even inferences that we draw. I suspect investigators probably have that information. Specifically, I know that that there was that she had been seen earlier that evening by friends. That she left their company presumably to go home. We believe she probably arrived home sometime that evening. And again, that's about as far as we're able to determine at this point. That's why it's important from the community's perspective. If later that evening, if someone saw something in that area that caught their attention or heard something that they thought was unusual, that getting that information to us might better allow us to be able to better identify a time frame in which we're speaking of when this event might have occurred. The detectives and our patrol resources have done, to my knowledge, a pretty aggressive area canvas, both as to the house and also the area where the vehicle was found. And to this point, we've not been able to yield anything fruitful in the way of information from any neighbors. Are you asking whether we believe that they may have dumped her car and stolen another vehicle? We don't have any reason to believe that at this point. That I'm aware of, Mark, is that correct?
Right.
Okay. I'm sorry, Sharon.
Why
he will respond to the scene of homicides from time to time. And we'll stay very closely connected with the investigators. Throughout the investigation, I believe he's been in and out of here a few times today. I think he met with Captain Bittman, some investigators yesterday, I believe. So he stays very well connected, and it's not unusual for them to respond out to the scene of an incident, I mean, particularly one like this.
Yeah. officers that they're watching the scene tonight at the beginning of the morning. What would you say to the community? I mean, it looked like a very random attack. Should people be worried and concerned?
Well, I think that was part of Sharon's question, and I hope I answered it, is that I can't say whether this was a random attack or not. I know we're looking at facts that are again allowing us to reach certain inferences that I can't discuss, which impact that question. I think anytime something like this happens in a neighborhood, this is my neighborhood as well. I live here. I raise my kids here. My wife is at home in the neighborhood, this very neighborhood as we speak, and certainly I'm concerned for her safety. I was out of town when this happened, and so you can imagine how concerned I was for the safety of my own family. But by that same token, I think people are taking reasonable precautions for their own safety, and I think they'll continue to do so. We'll be as transparent as we can with information, understanding that it's difficult to do that sometimes in an investigation, particularly at the early stages. But at the point we're able to announce an arrest, and we're working very aggressively to be able to do that, I think that will bring a sigh of relief to the community. But meanwhile, just trust, as I told her family earlier today, that the resources of this entire police department will come to bear on this investigation and on those responsible for it.
Have you been able to learn anything from acquaintances?
I will only tell you that investigators are interviewing as many people as we possibly can that have some connection or relationship with this young lady to see if there's any common theme that we need to pursue in some fashion. Sharon? I don't know that, no. I don't know that there's any behavior, but you know, certainly, but this is a small town. People tend to talk fairly freely, whether it be at social gatherings or with friends about situations that occur, that if someone's talking a lot about this case and appears to have a lot of detail about the case that you didn't read about in the newspaper or hear about in the television, that would be of some concern. If you see a change in someone's behavior as a result of this incident, it may warrant some attention that you might want to contact us, and we may want to talk to that person. But it's hard to, again, that's a hard call to make as to what they should be looking for, other than people talking about the case who seem to have a greater level of detail than they ordinarily would based on what they've read or heard. I wouldn't be in a position to answer that.
The house was rented.
That's correct.
Have you guys looked back since she was in 6 weeks ago to see if there were extra calls to the house? Because I've heard a lot of you out there listening that it was a problem house before she moved in. She kind of, they were happy that she was there. She was cleaning house up with me. Do you have any of the phone numbers? Do you know anything? There's nothing.
I don't know whether the investigators have looked at prior calls for service to that house or not. I guess the inference that you're drawing is that perhaps someone could have mistaken her for the previous occupants. Is that the issue? I don't know whether investigators have pulled calls for service or not. I suspect that they that will be something that they will do if they have not already done so. Again, I don't have any reason to believe that that's a reasonable inference based on what you can't know and what citizens can't know, which was the crime scene that these investigators had an opportunity to observe.
Yeah.
Anything else? Again, I apologize. I didn't have more for you, but we did want to honor our commitment that we made that we would follow up with you today. And certainly, as we get more information, we'll share that as well. Okay, thank you.
That was Police Chief Tim Longo holding a press conference on the murder of Jane Warren McGowan. If you have any information in the case, you're urged to call Crime Stoppers at 434-977-4000. This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. I'm Sean Tubbs.